Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Limits to Growth, The 30-Year Update, is a nonfiction environmental and systems analysis book by Jorgen Randers, Dennis Meadows, and Danella Meadows. It revisits the original 1972 Limits to Growth study and examines what three decades of global data reveal about population, industrial output, pollution, food production, and resource depletion, built around the World 3 System Dynamics Model. The book uses scenario analysis, rather than simple prediction, to show how growth in a finite system can create overshoot when demand exceeds ecological capacity. Its purpose is both diagnostic and corrective to clarify what the original study actually argued, to test those ideas against updated evidence, and to argue that humanity still has a narrow opportunity to change course through efficiency, reduced waste, and sustainable development. The book is aimed at readers who want a rigorous, policy-relevant account of long-term global limits and the consequences of ignoring them. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how the World 3 model turns growth into a systems problem. A central contribution of the book is its use of system dynamics to show that population, industrial production, food supply, pollution, and resource stocks are not independent trends, but linked parts of one global system. The World 3 model matters because it captures feedback loops, delays, and cumulative effects that simpler economic or environmental analyses often miss. In that framework, growth is not treated as automatically beneficial or endlessly self-correcting. Instead, rising throughput eventually pressures finite resources and sinks, meaning that the same processes that expand material welfare can also weaken the biophysical base supporting it. The update explains that this is why the original study focused on system behavior over time rather than on short-term forecasts. The logic is important once delays in policy response, technology adoption, or ecological recovery are built into the system. Visible harm can arrive long after harmful trends have become structurally locked in. That makes the book less a forecast of specific dates than a structured warning about how interconnected global systems behave under sustained expansion. Secondly, overshoot as the book's core warning about planetary limits. The book's main thesis is the concept of overshoot, meaning that human activity is using resources and generating waste faster than Earth can replenish or absorb them. This is the organizing idea behind the 30-year update, and the authors use it to interpret changes in population, material consumption, and environmental degradation since the original publication. Overshoot is important because it explains why apparent prosperity can coexist with accumulating vulnerability. Societies may continue growing for some time even after crossing a sustainable threshold, but the book argues that this does not mean the threshold was never crossed. Rather, the effects are delayed by inertia in ecosystems, infrastructure, and institutions. The update stresses that overshoot cannot continue indefinitely. If corrective action is delayed too long, the likely outcome is collapse or a much harsher adjustment. At the same time, the authors do not present the situation as hopeless. They argue that the damage can still be reduced if humanity lowers resource intensity, cuts waste, and brings human demand back within ecological limits. The idea is less about panic than about recognizing a physical boundary that policy cannot simply negotiate away. Thirdly, the book's argument that technology helps, but cannot solve the problem alone. One of the most important clarifications in the book is its treatment of technology. The authors do not reject technological progress, but they insist that technology by itself is too slow, too partial, and too dependent on material inputs to serve as a complete answer to overshoot. New tools can improve efficiency, reduce some forms of pollution, and increase output from a given amount of energy or raw material, but they also require investment, time, and supporting infrastructure. The book repeatedly emphasizes that technological responses are delayed and imperfect, which means they often arrive after major ecological pressures have already intensified. This is a significant departure from optimistic views that place faith in innovation as a universal corrective. The authors argue that if the underlying growth in population and consumption continues unchanged, efficiency gains alone may simply enable more expansion rather than stabilize the system. In that sense, the book distinguishes between technical improvement and structural change. Technology can contribute to sustainability, but only if it is paired with lower consumption, lower waste, and deliberate policy shifts that limit total material throughput. The analysis is realistic rather than anti-technology, which is one reason the book remains relevant in discussions of climate policy and sustainable development. Fourthly, why the 30-year update matters as a correction to public misunderstanding. The book also serves a corrective purpose because the original Limits to Growth was widely misunderstood as a crude prediction that specific resources like oil would simply run out by a certain date. The update explains that this was never the main claim. The issue was not the exhaustion of one commodity, but the long-term behavior of a global system moving beyond sustainable limits in multiple dimensions at once. That distinction matters because it reframes the debate from narrow resource panic to broader questions about ecological footprint, policy delay, and development strategy. By revisiting the model with updated data, the authors show that many broad trends remained consistent with the original scenarios, which strengthens the case that the underlying system's logic was sound even if public commentary often distorted it. The book, therefore, has an important intellectual function. It repairs the historical record and shows that the debate should be about how to manage planetary limits, not whether a simplistic apocalypse prediction came true. This makes the update especially valuable for policy readers because it replaces a caricature of the original argument with a more precise account of the risks and the choices still available. Lastly, a policy-oriented case for reducing throughput, waste, and inequality in development, the book is not just a warning. It also points toward broad policy priorities. Its practical emphasis is on reducing inefficiency, cutting waste, and aligning development with the carrying capacity of the planet. The authors suggest that a decent standard of living is possible for far more people than current patterns imply, but not under endless physical expansion. This leads to a distinction between growth and development that is central to the book. Improvement in human well-being does not have to depend on ever-increasing material throughput. Instead, the challenge is to deliver welfare with lower ecological cost, especially through better resource management, lower emissions, and more durable systems of production and consumption. The book is valuable because it frames sustainability as a systemic design problem rather than a moral slogan. It helps readers understand why isolated fixes are inadequate if the whole pattern of production and consumption remains unchanged. That makes it especially useful for policymakers, sustainability advocates, and readers who want to understand the structural trade-offs behind climate change, resource depletion, and long-range planning. The book stands out by combining scientific discipline with a clear political implication. Avoiding collapse requires coordinated, timely, and measurable change. In conclusion, Limits to Growth, the 30-year update, is best suited for readers who want a serious, evidence-based account of why sustainability is a systems problem, rather than a collection of separate environmental issues. Policymakers, environmental researchers, students of economics, and general readers interested in climate change and long-term global risk will find it especially useful. Its main benefit is conceptual clarity. It explains overshoot, feedback loops, delayed responses, and carrying capacity in a way that connects modeling to real-world policy choices. Unlike many books on the environment, it does not rely on anecdote or broad alarmism. Instead, it stands out for revisiting a famous historical model, testing it against decades of data, and showing why the core warning still matters. It is also unusual in how carefully it separates criticism of unlimited physical growth from criticism of human development itself. That distinction gives the book lasting value in debates about energy, resources, and climate policy. Readers looking for detailed solutions will find it more diagnostic than prescriptive. But that is part of its strength. It identifies the scale and structure of the problem before proposing any response. In that sense, it remains one of the most important works in the literature of global environmental limits. If you would like to support Jorgen Randers, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.